Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
Happy Earth Day. Spring is finally here.
Happy Earth Day to you.
Although, don't put away those winter coats just yet. Seems a little chilly out there. But it's coming. It's coming.
We got nothing to complain about this spring. And it has been really perfect.
First, a word from one of our supporters. Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned and community-focused since 1974. Open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op. Well, thoughts of spring. Donna has thoughts of spring here because when I think of spring, I think of rhubarb. And Donna's got a few words to say about rhubarb.
Rhubarb and lilacs.
Oh.
Not that you eat the lilacs, but I was thrilled that I'm starting to have some opening lilacs, and I've seen a few bushes around town. And with that, the rhubarb is popping up. So there are the usual things to do with rhubarb, but I did find something new that I am going to try myself. I can't speak from experience on this one, but I found a recipe for pickled rhubarb. So it's very simple. You cut two medium stalks, small experiment, only two medium stalks of rhubarb cut into two pieces. And then you take a cup and you put it in the jar, right? Then you boil together 1 cup of water, 1/2 cup of rice wine vinegar, 6 tablespoons of sugar, 2 teaspoons of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of mustard seed, and 1/2 teaspoon of black peppercorns, and 1 garlic clove. So you boil that all up until it's, kind of gooey, syrupy, and you pour it over the rhubarb in the jar, and you let it sit for at least 2 days or up to a month in the refrigerator.
In the refrigerator, all right.
And then
to a month. I like those things that you make and forget for a while. That's good.
Yeah, and then they go to the back of the refrigerator, and the month expires, and you're going, oh, no, what have I done now?
But it's probably still good. And then what in the world do you do with this stuff?
Well, I don't know because I haven't exactly tasted it. But in the recipe I was reading, they actually put it into shrimp fried rice. Now, I don't really eat shrimp anymore. It's too difficult. But fried rice, you can make it any old way you want. They've got it with eggs and onions and a little ginger and cilantro and the pickled rhubarb and scallions. Sounds yummy to me.
Sounds good. So we'll have a report later.
We'll do the pickled rhubarb report next week.
Pickled rhubarb report.
So that's rhubarb.
Good. Spring. Things are popping up all over, including a new brewery in central Iowa. And today,
today, more good beer.
In the studio, we have special guests.
Yes, with us we have Matt Neeson and Elliot Thompson, and they are from Alluvial Brewing Company?
Yeah, Alluvial Brewing Company.
Okay, and it is right next to Prairie Moon Vineyards, and they are kind of all in the family together, so you can go out north of town, and they're in separate buildings, so you can have your beer and have your wine at the same time.
Yeah.
So tell us how you guys arrived at this. They are brothers-in-law. Is that correct?
Yep, correct, yep.
Okay. So where did the beer idea come from?
We were just kind of
All young men think about making beer these days?
Well, I started making beer a few years ago, and I was already making wine over there at the winery, and the winemaking thing is kind of it's more of what you get right out of your vineyard, and then the winemaking part of it actually happens for only a couple months a year in the fall, and then a lot of the blending and all the other things you can do to the wine happens after that, but that main process is only kind of right at the beginning, and then that's a lot of bottling and stuff the rest of the year.
And that's all done out at Prairie Moon,
right? And so then, during kind of the winter, it's a little bit slower. And a couple years ago, my brother-in-law actually, with my wife, His brother got me into
a different brother-in-law, right?
That lived down in Des Moines. And I visited them, and he was brewing in his garage one day, and I had never really even thought about it, and I just said, I want to try that. So I looked at all of his equipment, got all the same kind of stuff, and like the next week later, I did my first batch, and then I probably did about 50 of my own batches at home, and then we kind of, over the winter last year, we kind of thought of this idea of the brewery next door to the winery, and just went from there.
It was kind of, we hadn't really discussed it at all, except there's this new building on the property, which is what we call home now, but that was built, 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think that finished 2 years ago or so.
Yeah, and originally that was built for... We were going to have like a country store out there. I was doing some produce, and we wanted to have a country store out of the front, sell the produce out of the front, and then also get other Iowa products and produce from other friends and
people. So it's kind of just across the field from the winery.
Yeah, and property adjacent to the a separate piece of property that's next door to the winery. It's only about 200 yards away, but
yeah. So it was built for that, and then. No, we did that for the last couple of years, and we didn't really feel like the building, it was that whole idea was tough, and we were kind of talking about it over the winter.
I did buy some fabulous tomatoes from you for a few years. I have to
say. Yeah, no, they were good, but it was just
Elliot is a really good grower.
Well, thanks. I'm taking the year off, but I definitely want to get back to it at some point, but. So the building was kind of, we didn't feel like it was being utilized, and it seems like the perfect space for a brewery. A lot of people come in there and, think that's what it was made for, but it wasn't. But it just so happens to have the perfect setup for it.
It is a lovely building.
It's a beautiful setting. Nice patio. Mm-hmm. You've got the bar built in, and you can see into the brewing, all the tanks and stuff in the back.
Yeah. It didn't take that much retrofitting, really, which we were lucky with. We had to do a few plumbing issues with running the sinks up in the front. We didn't have any water up there, so that was a little bit of an issue, but we got that figured out, which was pretty minor compared to what needed to be done. So it went pretty quickly. We ordered our equipment about a year ago today.
Mm-hmm.
So all the equipment was made custom by some brothers that run a welding company out in Michigan. So it's all made here in the U.S. and it took a little bit longer, but we wanted to make sure we get quality made stuff.
Well, tell us about your beer making process. You have, well, I'll just say when I went in, what I love is you have flights. Mm-hmm. So you have the two different, or you can put what. Explain, because there's a lot of choices.
Yeah, we have 10 beers on tap, so our flight boards happen to hold 5, so you can pick whatever 5 you want, but also you can you can do 10 and try them all. So they're just 5-ounce glasses, so those have been pretty popular the first month that we've been open.
And a flight is a tasting.
Oh,
tray.
Right. Yeah, correct. Good idea to explain that. So you go in and you get this little wooden thing, tray-like, and it's got 5 glasses in it. And there are how many ounces in each glass?
5.
Okay, so you end up with 25 ounces of beer in 5 flavors.
Right. It's nice to taste them all the way down the line.
Yeah, it really, nicely. Especially till you've picked out your favorite. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you're going to change beers, too.
Yeah, they'll rotate. I think we're going to have... 5 that are year-round, and then we'll probably rotate the other 5.
We'll have some core beers that we'll always have, and then we kind of, our idea is we want to have a new beer most every week for people to come and try.
Brewing all the time?
All the time, yeah. When a tank's empty, you got to refill it. So.
And so how, well, first of all, describe, the beers on the menu right now. Let's hear all 10 of them.
So right now we're pretty heavily ale-focused because they're quite a bit faster to make right now than doing lagers and such. Those beers are taking an extended period of time, and eventually we'll get there later this year with making some of those kind of beers. But right now they they just go from the lighter end of the spectrum to it from a American wheat ale, which is a simple light wheat beer, not very hop focused, more on the malt and the grain there. And
what's that one called?
It's called Onondaga Wheat.
The names are really nice. They're all kind of local names.
Yeah, that's
named after Ames's old Middle Street or Main Street.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So it goes down the line from there. Probably this week, our new beer will be called Electrum Amber, which will just be a maltier amber ale, more focused. We haven't really had one of those kind of beers yet, so we thought we needed to introduce one of those to our weekly release for new beers.
That would be a malty ale. That's what you introduced?
Yeah, like an amber is not going to be. It's going to kind of in between a porter and a light beer. It's going to have a little bit more malt, but it's definitely malt focused more than hop focused. So that'll be on this weekend.
After that, we have those smash pale ales that we've been doing, mm-hmm. and Donna really liked that one when she was out there. It was that one was a made with just a Simcoe hop, and then
is that the one that has – you could just sit there and smell it all day?
Yeah.
It has such a beautiful floral odor just coming out of the glass.
Yeah, so the
– It tastes good too, but it really smells wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's – we've been really happy with those. It's – yeah, we call it the Smash Series, so single malt, single hop, and they're pale ales.
Humulus lupus series.
Yeah. So
Humulus lupus. What's that?
That's the actual scientific name for hops.
So we're gonna feature
the genus.
One hop in each one of those pale ales, and it's kind of a for palate education, really. I mean, just to really see what that.
That's
hop
what we
shows.
Like a good palate education.
Yeah. So the first one, the Simcoe hop, was more piney and. A little more citrus notes.
Yeah, each hop has a different characteristic, and especially nowadays there's a lot more – there's new hops coming on the market all the time from private breeders that are taking all these hops and making new varieties because it's
– Let's talk about – okay, so the main ingredients in beer are hops, malted barley
– And sometimes wheat.
Yeah. Okay, so tell everybody for what a hop is. It's a flower, right?
Right. It's a vine that grows a cone on it. Mm-hmm. Basically, it looks like a miniature pine cone, and it's a perennial that comes back every year. So basically, it comes out from the ground. It's got a rhizome that's in the ground that shoots out a shoot every. Right now, they're out about 6 to 8 inches already.
And the part you use is the kind of coney
part.
Yeah,
so they grow up. A lot of people have them on the side of a trellis or whatever. But most places that grow them commercially, they have just a bottom wire and a top wire with a piece of baling twine that runs from the top to the bottom. And that vine will curl around that twine and grow all the way to the top. And then when it gets up to the top, it starts putting on the cones. Mm-hmm. And then I think they're usually harvested about the end of August every year.
Is this a traditional crop for this kind of climate? Is that what
we can grow some here, but most of the hops in the United States are grown up in the Pacific Northwest, up in Yakima Valley, Washington, and Oregon, and some in Idaho.
Well, that's where they need cooler?
They need cooler and a lot of moisture.
Oh, okay.
Here in Iowa, you have to irrigate them with a drip irrigation. They have to
wet enough.
Right, right. They like it really wet.
And So the hops varietals are sort of like wine varietals? There are many, many kinds of varieties of hops?
Many kinds. I mean, there's American, there's the traditional, more of your traditional hops are going to be you're from Germany and England and over there in Europe. So a lot of the lager hops and a lot of your hops for your lighter beers and stuff like that are all European-based hops.
So how are you sourcing your hops? For your beers?
Many different people, especially nowadays. It's not hard to get some of the more regular hops, but with the amount of breweries that have popped up over the last few years, it's become increasingly difficult to find some of these newer hops. A lot of the bigger breweries are gobbling them up real quick, and then all these new startup breweries, we all want some too. So
mm-hmm.
it's actually, you got to really search it out and find it. And I think that's because nowadays IPAs and your hoppier beers with your American hops, citrusy kind of hops, are really popular. So,
yeah, and as the breweries scale up with the demand, you know, if you make one batch of an IPA, you're going to be using pounds and pounds and pounds of
hops. Yeah, the bigger you get, the more hops they need. So these breweries that started as small breweries like us that have grown into big breweries, they're contracting a lot more hops now. And that's what most brewers do now, is you actually contract hops in the future. You mm-hmm. lay out, you know, I want to buy this many pounds mm-hmm. next year, and the year after that, many more and more.
Oh,
and more,
so
and more.
So there's hops futures now. Huh?
Yep.
Of course.
Well, there's hops for the future, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there mm-hmm. is hops.
You agree to buy them for the yeah. future purchase. And
of course. And there's no substitute for making good beer except hops. You can't. There's not like a chemical thing you could add. I mean, there's no things made out of soybeans. Or I mean, it seems
right. Thank goodness.
We can do anything. Scientists can do anything, but hops are the soul of,
right.
of
and
brewing.
And each one's completely different. So when the new hop that everyone thinks is the new best thing becomes really hard to find because everyone wants it. So and the price just keeps going up and up on some of them. So
well, yeah. So are you guys looking for varieties that you could actually grow? Because you have some land.
Yep. Hmm. Yeah, we're planning on here. We've been so busy this year. I don't know if we'll get to it, but right out by the brewery, we're gonna plan on planting some Centennial and some Columbus and some Cascade hops, which mm-hmm. are all hops that we use in our beers currently right now. So and
that would make it truly local.
Yeah, and then every year we'll take those hops and actually make what's called a fresh hop ale, where you harvest them immediately and you harvest them and bring them right into the brewery and make a beer instantly.
Oh, how fabulous.
While they're still green?
Well, they're still green and wet.
So and wet.
A lot of people
okay.
call them a wet hop beer.
Oh, my.
Where most of the hops that we use, they're all dry hop.
Oh, and so they're kind of tan when you get them.
When we get them, they're all dried out, and a lot of them are pelletized. So they actually run them through a press, and they compact them mm-hmm. to make them more stable, because the oils all compact, and then mm-hmm. they're a little bit more stable when they're pelletized, and they can last longer. So
okay, so give me an idea of, because now already I'm focused on, I want to try this local fresh hops beer. So you're going to have to plant them. Mm-hmm. Like maybe not this year, but maybe next mm-hmm. year. Then, so are we looking at like 2 years from now before we can have a hops?
Yeah.
Before
yeah.
we can.
Yeah.
Oh boy, something to look forward
yeah.
to. Oh boy.
Yeah. I planted a hops along the side of my house just as an ornamental, because I put on something that would crawl up on a vine, and it. And actually, it was in the shade a little bit, not the ideal place for hops, but it will grow there, and it does. It comes back every year, despite the fact that I ignore it completely.
Right.
And it does, I don't know the variety, but yes, it does get those little conies on it and everything.
It's kind of
it's
pretty.
A lovely, it's a
yeah.
lovely plant. It's a, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess kind of going from there, I guess since we talked about the hops in our beer, we were saying we do the smash pale ale, we do our house pale ale, which has a combination of, what, three or four hops, and
yep.
then we also have our house IPA. And then going to the darker side, we have...
What's the house IPA called?
It's just the alluvial IPA.
Okay.
So, and then after that, we have a brown porter, an oatmeal stout. And then the oatmeal stout we've been using to experiment with some offshoots of that. We did an espresso oatmeal stout for the first month here, and that was some Berge's cold press coffee that we tossed in, and the next one that we come out is going to be that same oat stout, but we're going to do a vanilla coffee. And then we also
have coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Matt, we used Madagascar vanilla beans.
And then, coffee beans.
And then we're going to add the vanilla bean and the coffee to it to give it a kind of a...
I'll be right over.
A combination. Maybe like a latte stout or something like that, you know?
Good.
Oh, that sounds
good.
Wonderful.
And then following it up, there's an Imperial Red. So that's what we have right now. But, you know, as we move into the summer, some of those heavy beers will make way for some lighter beers for the summer.
You mentioned your house beer. The term, you've run across it, house wine, house beer. Does that mean that that's your favorite or that you just have lots of it?
Well, we'll generally try to always have that one. Our wheat's kind of, you know, the lightest beer that we have right now, and it's been a very popular one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that one people would be upset if it ever went away. And so same with our IPA and the pale ale. So.
Whose wheat are you able to use?
All the wheat is German wheat. So right now our wheat beer is made with German Pilsner malt and German wheat.
And the barley?
All the barley we get is from Minnesota.
Oh.
So a lot of it's grown in the Dakotas and in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And
You explain, because I learned all this when I made my first trip to Alluvial, about malting.
So, malting is a process where they sprout the barley. You know, when it comes in out of the field, they actually sprout it, and then they stop the germination.
So they sprout it by keeping it wet and warm?
Yeah. Hmm. And then it's malted. Traditional way is a floor malted process. So it's basically...
Floor malted?
Yeah. So it's basically kilned at a really, really low temperature. So all the base malt, which is what makes up most beer... Which is that's a term we use, base malt. So it's going to be the bulk of the barley that you use for a batch of beer. Usually it's up to 80% most of the time. Sometimes it can be more or a little bit less. But
so you're choosing how roasted the
right.
That's a flavor factor.
So obviously, like when the lighter beers are very low roasted barley, so it's not going to impart much color. And then you'll have that base malt, and then to make your stout beers and stuff like that, you're going to be throwing in variations. There's so many different kinds of highly kilned malts, from a medium roasted all the way to a completely black roasted malt.
It's like a coffee bean.
Right.
So you buy it with the specifications of what you want.
Right. There's so many different specifications from medium light roast to medium roast to a little bit darker to ultra dark.
So when you buy, like, what kind of quantity would you buy? Like if you wanted a medium roasted barley, I mean, how many pounds are we talking about here?
We just have a couple sacks of each of those that are just at the brewery. But those
a sack is like 50 pounds?
Yep.
So they just bring it in and you've got it sitting there in the...
Yep.
Do you have to keep that in the walk-in?
No.
Usually
for a batch of stout or whatever, it's a couple scoops out of each of the dark malts that we're using, and then you just close the bag back up and it's fine.
And then, you mix it in the tank, and then what happens?
Well, you got to grind it first.
You have to have a grinder.
You have to crush all the barley and all the wheat and all that first, so... After you weigh out.
Is it like a burr grinder or a stone grinder?
It's like a stone grinder. It's two long pins that have a rough surface on them, and it feeds it from the top into them and has a motor attached to it and then grinds it into buckets. So
is that the same kind of mill that
It's like a feed mill.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Okay.
Yep,
so you got one of those in the back room.
Yep, we got one of those, and you got to get all your grain that you weighed out for each batch, and you run it through your grinder. And then after that, the basic steps to brewing are you have one tank that's got hot water in it, about 165 degrees usually to start, and then you'll pitch in all your grain that you just ground up, and you stir it in so it's all nice and dissolved in there. Then you close the tank and you let it sit for about an hour, and that's where, in the beer making process, that's where you get a conversion of the sugars in the grain, the starch to the sugars. So, and then
it's kind of like cooking oatmeal or something.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, when you let it sit with that temperature of the water.
Well, give me a visual on how big the tank is. So it's 10 gallons.
We have 100 gallon tanks.
100 gallon tanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So,
how many 100-gallon tanks do you have?
We have – actually, our system is two side-by-side tanks, so 200 gallons next to each other, and we can actually make 175 gallons at a time, or we can just do one side and just make – our fermentation tanks, we have two smaller ones and two larger ones. Mm-hmm. So the two larger ones are double batches. And then the smaller ones are usually the tanks that we reserve for our weekly beers. So we do a small batch of them first to see how, you know, if we like it a lot. it's usually a new recipe every time going into those small tanks. So,
all right. So you cook it for an hour. Then what happens?
And then you transfer it off into the next tank, which are our boiling tanks. So it gets pumped out of that mashing tank is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And then you move over your sugar water from that tank into the boiling tank.
Are you straining the grains off at that point?
Yeah, the
grains only cook for an hour, and after that they're done.
The grains are have all the extracted sugar out of them by then. So
what do you do with that stuff?
We have a guy that's hopefully going to come start feeding it to his hogs.
Oh, I want some of that pork.
Yeah, exactly.
You will let us know who's going to do so we can buy it. That sounds wonderful.
We were thinking we just needed a couple of hogs right outside the door and they could just munch on it all day.
I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
The deer have been liking it.
So. Yeah, the deer have been feasting on it lately. So
that's wonderful. I'd like to take the opportunity to mention this is KHOI FM 89.1. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, and we're talking about beer with the guys from the Alluvial Brewing Company. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're in the middle of discussing the brewing process. We've got things in large tanks cooking away and draining off. We're talking to Matt Nissen and Elliot Thompson from the Alluvial Brewing Company.
Yes, we got our new young buck brewmasters in town. Here we go. So Matt is describing to us how they make beer, and we are at the stage where you have strained off the grains.
Correct, yeah.
And you have spent grains. Now, you guys just want the liquid from that, but the spent grain is the part that you're throwing out. And tell us what happens to the spent grain.
Well, some people do feed it to animals and stuff afterward, and then if you get it right away, you can make you can bake with it and stuff like that. And
yes.
I know people that do take it and make dog biscuits and stuff out of it.
Well, it really does make very good. Haven't you made some, Lana? Lana's the bread maker.
my small experience with bread, I have branched out to, actually trying some spent grain. It adds a real nice crunch and texture to a bread. I have added it. Yes, it's great. And I must also mention that, yes, it is a very volatile sort of thing because it wants to go bad. It wants to go bad really fast.
Yeah, it was heated up to 160 degrees. So.
And all the little microbes in there are working. So if you're going to use it, get it into the refrigerator as soon as you can or get it into your recipe as soon as you can.
Feed it to the pigs, do you get drunken piggies?
No, because it's not converted into alcohol yet.
Oh. So.
You just get happy piggies.
And I bet delicious piggies. Right. That could be a whole other sideline there, guys.
Talk to us in a couple of years.
Okay, yeah. Okay. And you can sit on the patio and watch the piggies eat it.
Yeah.
Right. Free-range pigs right next to the brewery.
Okay. So you've strained off all of the grains and the liquid goes into the tank.
Correct.
Then what happens?
So, yeah, that you pump off all the liquid into the tank and then you have the burner going, and the second step is to boil the beer. So you wait until the beer comes to boiling temperature, and then when it does start boiling, you start your clock on either a 60-minute or 90-minute boil. Most all of our beers are in the 60-minute category. And then during that...
And what does the boiling do?
That's where you add your hops, and it actually boils off some water to reduce the water content in the beer into...
So the hops are actually boiled then, not steeped?
They're actually, yeah. So once it comes to boiling, if you're going to make a beer that's going to be more bitter, you're going to add the hops right at the beginning of the boil, because the longer they actually sit in that boiling beer, the more the bitterness in the hop is going to be extracted from that, from being rolled around in the tank for so long. And then if you want more of just the flavor and the aroma of the hops, you add them closer to the end of the boil, so the last 15 minutes or so to when you turn the flame off on the burner. So those last couple additions of hops are usually for aroma and for flavor, because if you're most of the ones you added way back when it started boiling, that long boiling burns off all that aroma and flavor. So after the hour's done,
it really is a cooking process.
Oh, definitely it is.
I do that with garlic sometimes. Like I'll add garlic at the beginning, and then it kind of settles into a base note, and then I'll finish again with a little more garlic because you want it. It is a different flavor that you're layering.
Yeah, like our IPAs and even our double IPAs, they're going to have a lot of that bittering hop at the way those work is there's going to be a lot right at the beginning to give it that bitterness, and then a lot of it at the end to give it that intense flavor and aroma. So the IPAs are going to be way more expensive because you're adding a lot more hops. Mm-hmm. Whereas the wheat beer, it's usually one or two additions of hops, of not very much hop, because you don't really want that beer to be an overly aggressively hoppy beer. You want it to be more dominated by that light flavor and style and characteristic.
So when it's called a double IPA, is that because it has twice as many hops?
Usually it does. Mm-hmm. And it usually has higher alcohol content.
Oh, okay.
So most of the time your regular pale ales and IPAs are going to be in your 5 to 7% alcohol, whereas our newest double IPA that we're going to have coming out is going to be in the mid to upper 8% alcohol.
I know. And on your board where you list the recipe, I mean the names of the beers and what they are, you do list the alcoholic content, and you can see, what's the highest ones are?
Our highest one right now is 7.5, but the next one is closer to 8.7 or 8.8.
Yeah, the new double IPA is going to be about 8.7, I think. So, and then on our board we also do list what's called IBU.
Which
stands for International Bitterness Units.
Oh!
So a lot of people don't, when they see that, they don't realize what IBU means. So on our board, you can look up there and it'll say alcohol percentage. And then next to it, it'll say IBU and it'll have a number. And the higher number on that side of the board means the higher the bitter in the beer. So in a higher number, like in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, mean that beer is going to have more bitterness to it, where a really low one like our wheat is going to have a very, very slight bitterness, hardly any. So
I'm all for the bitter.
I'm glad somebody's taking care of categorizing this. It's like the Scoville units for peppers.
It's nice
to know what you're getting into. It's very good, very good.
Part of the palate education. I like that, palate education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then when you're at all the hops are done being added and stuff, basically you shut it off and you let everything settle to the bottom of that boiling tank for
about, the hops stay in the tank.
Right. After you shut off the boil, they all kind of just you'll swirl it right at the end to kind of get a circular motion going, and they'll all kind of just settle down into the middle of the tank. And then after about 10 minutes, you'll start transferring it with a pump through a chilling coil, which cools that boiling, now it's called wort.
Wort.
Yeah, W-O-R-T, which is boil.
That's where the wort comes from. Okay,
wort.
Yeah.
turns into beer after it's fermented, so it goes through the chilling coil.
So are we filtering out the hops at that point?
No.
Most
of them are settled to the bottom of the tank, and they're just going to stay there. And you, after it's done transferring, you'll get rid of them. I mean, there'll be a little bit of hop particulate that'll get through the that'll come through, but most of it stays back in the tank.
The connector is raised up.
It's above the level of where the hops settle to the bottom.
And then what do you do with the hops that are the spent hops?
Can't really do much with those.
You mean the pigs won't eat those?
No, they're actually poisonous to dogs and pigs. Ooh. And stuff. Though hops are not good
compost?
For...
Compost?
Not really, because the oils and the stuff from the hops are not good for putting back on the land. It actually will kill plants and stuff.
maybe you've got a new herbicide, herbicide.
Yeah, just kills everything.
Yeah. That's good to know. Yes.
But, yeah, after it's being done transferred, it'll go into the tank, and then that's where it'll get yeast put into that tank, and the next day it'll be bubbling away and fermenting. And then it's usually about most of our beers, I'd say, are a 12 to 15 day from start to finish.
Well, now tell me about yeast. So there are different. Is it like in the cheese making process where you're selecting specific yeast strains to produce certain results?
Correct.
Isn't there a word for that? Like, I want to say thelophilic, but that's not the. That's I just made that up.
Well, phenols are what the smells you're going to get off of different yeast.
How are the yeast described when you're picking the kind of yeast that you want for the beer?
So if you're making certain kind of beers, you either want that yeast to help accent your hops, or you want that yeast to help accent the malt or give the beer a yeasty character. So on a lot of your Belgian beers and stuff like that, they use a particular yeast that gives it.
These yeasts have names or numbers or something?
There's tons of different kinds of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's probably hundreds of kinds of yeast out there right now that you could get. So people culture them and they sell them. There's plenty of companies out there that you can order some yeast and they'll overnight it to you in the mail.
Is it like you can buy sourdough starters, but you can also culture your own from wild yeasts and things like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of breweries nowadays actually doing wild yeast beers where you don't really...
And are we going to try that sometime?
Not in the near future. Maybe sometime. It's a real gamble. A lot of those places, they end up throwing a lot of beer down the drain because it doesn't turn out very good. So you can either get lucky and get a wild yeast strain that does a good job and makes this really complex, amazing beer, or you can get a beer that just tastes terrible.
Well, I would say, meeting you two young gentlemen, that as you go through this process in a year or two, and since you look kind of like you're into creative challenges, I would bet at some point that you're going to do something like that.
Yeah, eventually, you know.
You kind of look like you would try anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what the small batch is for, I guess.
Right.
So. Yeah. Speaking of batches, you do batches and you just serve your product on premises. You don't bottle this stuff yet.
No, not right now. Right now we're exclusively out of the tasting room. Mm-hmm. So if you come out to the brewery, we have the 10 taps and you can try the beers out there and you can take growlers home, which is...
Tell us about growlers. This is a whole new concept for me.
So, yeah, the growlers, we have two sizes. One's 64-ounce, one's 32-ounces.
They're real cute little brown glass jugs.
Yeah. So you're starting to see some of the 32-ounce ones in some liquor stores. A couple out of Des Moines are doing it, I think. And so those, you could fill it up out the brewery, and then we seal it up for you, and then you can take it home and... drink it within a week or whatever. And once you open it, I'd give it a day or two. But that's another way to taste it. But, yeah, right now we're just strictly on site. And, we needed to feel out the supply and demand, I guess. And right now we've done a really good job of having all the beers that we've wanted available to everybody. We haven't really ran out of anything. So just our scheduling kind of just fell into place, and we've been lucky to have that out there. So once, if we start running out of beer out there, there's nothing we can really do as far as distributing it. But, if we start to if we ever get to the point where we add a couple fermenters, then we can produce more beer. And then at that point, we can start to think about it, expanding mm-hmm. your network a little bit. But
yep.
Well, I went out for my tastings and brought home two growlers. I picked the flavors I liked, and I got two jugs of different flavors. And I have to say that even after, because they don't hold the bubbles a long time, mm-hmm. but even drinking it flat was a very pleasant experience. By the time I got to the bottle, the bottom of the bottle was flat, but the flavor was so good, we drank it anyway.
Yeah.
That's good.
And then you save your jug, and you can take it back again and fill it up again.
Yep. Once you buy the glass, you don't have to buy it again.
Right.
So just a one time, and then you can just wash it out and bring it back every time.
Yes, with a nod to Earth Day, let's reuse some of those good bottles. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about beer and all kinds of good things with Matt Neeson and Elliot Thompson from the Alluvial Brewing Company. This is KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about beer with Matt and Elliot.
Yes, very local beer.
I'd also like to take the time to remind you that you're listening to KHOI-FM. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. And if you would like to learn more about the Donna Lana Kitchen, go to khoifm.org. That is the website for the whole station. This is community radio. We take advice, we take opinions, and it's your voice.
And we give
in the community.
Advice and opinions.
Yes, yes.
Freely.
You can go to the Donna Lana Kitchen page there, and there's past shows that you can listen to, all kinds of recipes, and there's a great picture of Donna and I. We're talking about beer, how it's made, the theory behind it. Now we're kind of to the tasting room. Tell us about that.
Yes, so Matt has been telling us the process. So it's in the tank. It's got the yeast in it.
Mm-hmm.
And how long does it sit? And then what happens?
Most of them are about 2 weeks, roughly. Maybe a little bit longer, depending on the beer.
And the temperature is?
You ferment the temperature. Most beers, most of the ales are going to be between 65 and 70 degrees fermentation temperature. Mm-hmm. So the lagers and the beers that we're going to do here in the future, those are done way cooler in the 50-degree range for a longer extended period of time. So that's why those beers I was saying earlier take a lot longer to make, is because they ferment a lot slower, because the cooler you get, the slower the fermentation process is.
And how do you know when you got it where you want it?
We test it with a what we call a specific gravity. So the starting gravity of the beer is how sweet it is. And then as the fermentation goes, you can measure how it just goes down and goes down and goes down until the beer
is
nice.
Is that like with bricks? Is that how you're measuring it?
Similar. In wine, we use bricks. And in beer, we do specific gravity, which is the same kind of thing. It just basically tells you how much sugar is left in the beer.
But I suppose you smell it and taste it too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and then with your hoppier beers, your IPAs and stuff, those actually get dry hopped. What that means, it's called, is after the fermentation is complete, you actually open the fermenter and you'll use hops that are just pitched right into the tank after the fermentation.
So you throw in more hops and it kind of soaks up the flavor.
It actually, they dissolve and then they float through the beer and they give the beer an intense aroma. So most all of our IPAs and all of our Humulus Lupus series, single hop series, those are all dry hop beers because half of the appeal of those beers is that wonderful aroma. And you're not going to get that wonderful aroma without dry hopping.
So is that what you did to that beer that I liked the way it smelled so much?
Yeah. Yeah, that one. Oh. That was part of that series. And then
it was. It was very perfumey in the absolutely best way.
Yeah, we've had another one since you were out there. It's a,
yep.
It's a Citra hop beer, so that one.
Intense.
Yeah.
It's completely different. The one you had was more of like a piney kind of aroma. The uh-huh. new one we have with the Citra hop is like mangoes and
oh my goodness.
Fruits.
Very so that heavy. Means to keep up with you guys, I'm going to have to come every week and taste.
Yeah, that's all right. That's our plan.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us then, okay, after it's been...
If it's been dry hopped, that actually will make the process take about another 5 or 6 days because mm-hmm. those have to float through the beer and settle out. And then if it's not, after that, after the fermentation, you allow it to just sit there for a few days because you have to let it, like, just rest with the yeast in there for a little bit mm-hmm. and then you'll bleed off all the yeast through our cones on the bottom and then you'll transfer it into our cooler where we have a carbonation tank. So the tank in there is all clean and sanitized. The beer's from the fermenter into this tank and we turn on there's a small stone in there with very, very small pores on it that's connected to a CO2. And it dissolves that CO2
bubbles
into the beer.
It right into
yep.
It. Well, now you do have another option. Tell us about the nitro option. How does that work?
Well, that's just a way of serving beer. So a traditional English, it's pretty much an English way to serve beer. It's pretty much if you ever had a beer that's nice and creamy and
right. This is a new thing to me. My right. son introduced me to this in Minneapolis. We went to a pub up there, and they served us the same beer, which is what you did. And you have a version that's the nitro,
mm-hmm.
and then the regular one with the CO2. Mm-hmm. And so you're tasting the same liquid, but because the nitrogen makes smaller bubbles, mm-hmm. the texture of the beer is creamier, and it does really affect the flavor. So it mm-hmm. tastes like two different
yeah,
beers.
Yeah, it smooths the beer out because yeah. actually nitrogen will not dissolve into the beer.
Uh-huh.
So you can't carbonate a beer with nitrogen because it won't dissolve into the beer like carbon dioxide will. So there's a special tip that's on the way that you serve these out of the faucets that actually goes through a bunch of small holes and then at a high pressure and then comes out that so it actually fluffs it mm-hmm. into the beer.
Like the mm-hmm. way you fluff the milk into
right.
an
like,
espresso or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, or like the way, you know, they have a whipped cream canister uh-huh. that whips it up. It whips that beer into a nice creaminess.
So nitro beers can only be had on tap, right?
They can only be had on tap. There's a few companies that have tried to make a way to put a little nitrogen tab in the bottom of a can. And it works to a point, but it's not the same.
It doesn't get nearly the
fluffiness of it being on tap. So
they tell you to pour it. Pour it hard so, you know, you have it up here and it's pouring straight up. But you never, ever get that thick,
yeah.
creamy head
so
that looks
gotta,
like a
shake.
So
you got to go to the place.
Well,
yeah, and the one thing, you can't take growlers of those either because by the time you got it home, it would be flat.
Be flat, yeah.
So, Elliot, tell me a little bit about your both of your vision for not just a place to have nitro beer, but your vision for a place to come and enjoy good beer.
Well, yeah, I think that's... You know, other than the beer, which is obviously the main focus, I mean, that's what our business is, but the tasting room and the whole complex, you know, we have greater vision for. I don't know, we like the book that you have there, we want it to be this place that is kind of a social hub or a social gathering spot to facilitate other things. So, mm-hmm. you know, it just so happens to be in yeah, whenever I go somewhere, visit a new place, I go find the coffee shops and the pubs and those sort of social places, and I just I think our location and our building.
Please give us the address.
The atmosphere. It's 3715 West 190th Street in Ames. So it's north of Ames, a couple miles. It's
out in the country. It's really pretty.
Yeah, it's just west of the Ames Country Club golf course. Yeah. So it's not. It basically, town's almost come to us now. It's the town has grown that way a lot in the last 10 years. So
you'll be a neighborhood bar before
pretty much
before you know it.
I mean, it's kind of been that way. It's been really nice to see a lot of these people I've never seen before that say, "Oh, I live." I mean, I can't tell you how many conversations
I've heard. Oh, I live across that field over there.
Yeah, pretty much.
The other day on Sunday, there was two people sitting at the bar. One of them said he lived two blocks away, so then the other couple was like, oh, where do you live? And then these two talked, which they never would have talked before or spoken.
See?
I've heard a lot about just from talking to people out there, I've overheard so many conversations of these people talking that have never met each other, even though they live in the same neighborhood.
Ha-ha, what a rural neighborhood bar.
And that's kind of – I mean, in the perfect world, that's how it would be. It would be a social place and a place to talk And our tasting room is a smaller tasting room. We don't have any TVs or anything, so it is kind of a social place where there is a lot of interaction with each other. I lost my voice from chatting so much.
Yeah.
it's been great to see it. But it is, you know, this social hub that we want it to be, and then again to facilitate other things. And we have 80 acres of farmland that are right up next to the building, and you know we have a lot of plans for that. And you know, this year we rented 3 acres to a friend of ours to do produce, so you can see her out there working. And
it's right next to Prairie Moon Vineyards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's
we got vineyards on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's vineyards on the west, and then the farm on the east, and then we're going to work on restoring some more prairie and this wetland. So the whole complex.
Really pretty setting.
Yeah,
I mean it's great, and I feel like is a great hub basically for all of this. So
good. Elliot referred to a book that I have here. It's a classic. It's been around for a long time. It's called The Great Good Place by Ray Oldenburg, and it was written in 89. And it talks about the great good place as bars, as pubs, as coffee shops, places where people meet. Regularly. The author suggests that for a healthy existence, citizens must live in a balance of three realms: home life, the workplace, and the inclusively sociable places. And he calls that the third place. We've been talking past shows about the third plate, but this is the third place, the place where we make community, the place where we're always welcome. And any time that can happen, that is a good thing. I want to thank you for being in the studio with us today.
Oh, you got to tell us about your hours for the Great Good Place.
Okay. Yeah, the
and
hours.
The website.
We're open Thursday and Friday from 4 to 10 p.m. Saturday we're open noon to 10, and then Sunday we're open noon to 5. And then hopefully by the summer we'll add an hour, so it'll be noon to 6 on Sundays. But right now it's noon to 5. And when we do update that, you can find it on our website, alluvialbrewing.com. And also the Facebook page is where a lot of our
current updates.
Yeah, it's facebook.com/alluvialbrewing. And from there is our Twitter address and stuff. But you can find it all on our website, and that's where we keep an up-to-date taproom list, and we'll put events and things like that on there, and contact information if you want to talk to us about having an event out there. Because we do have the tasting room holds about 40 – well, it has 40 seats, but it holds more like 50 or 60 people standing. But then in the back we do have it's not private because we open it up to everybody, but it's a totally different vibe. It's a little quieter back there, and – we've had a lot of
with all the brewing equipment.
Yeah, it's right
in front of
right in front of the brewing equipment. But we've had a lot of parties, and there's going to be an Iowa State design exhibition Thursday that they're going to set up there. And yeah, it's been great to have groups like that enjoy the back. And yeah,
sounds like a good thing. Celebrate Earth Day coming up. Don't forget the All Species Parade, 2:00. On Saturday. You've been
at the library.
At the library. And there's a whole bunch of other events at the library coming up, too. You have been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen with special guests from the Alluvial Brewing Company, Matt Neeson and Elliot Thompson. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas, and happy Earth Day!
Yes. So visit a great good place and help make that happen. We've had excellent engineering by Rick Morrison. Enjoy Earth Day every day. Happy spring. Eat good food and enjoy life.